Thank you, Lynn. Yeah, it's been a just fine 55th birthday. We didn't do too much. We went out to breakfast after church. I meditated, showered, went to church, went out to breakfast, and then we took a drive to the mountains, and we went and looked at another property that is available right now that would make a good Awakening Together retreat center. This one is up in the mountains near Westcliff, and it's also a lovely property. Earlier this week, I shared with you all through both ReginaDonAkers.com and through AwakeningTogether.org. I shared with you a property down near the Spanish Peaks, which I love. But there is another property up by Westcliff that's also very, very nice. So maybe later this week I will share that link with you. And we went up and looked at that today. So that's where I was. And then, of course, took the dogs for a walk along the river. And I had a birthday shake, not birthday cake, but birthday shake, a little mini shake from Sonic. And I just finished that a bit ago, so so everything is going well. What I would like to do is start by playing a song. Again, the purpose of the song is just to kind of get still, get centered. The name of this song is Oh My Love. I think I've played it before. That's one of my favorites. It's written by John Lennon, but it is sung by Sushila Raman. So here we go, Oh My Love.
For the first time in my life, my eyes are wide open. Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my eyes can see. I see the wind. Oh, I see the trees. Everything is clear in my heart. I see the clouds. Oh, I see the sky. Everything is clear in our world. Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my mind is wide open. Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my mind can feel. I feel life. Oh, I feel love. Everything is clear in my heart. I feel sorrow. Oh, I feel dreams. Everything is clear in our world. First time in my life, my eyes are wide open. Oh, my love, for the first time in my life, my eyes can see.
Lovely song. I'm certain I've played it before for you. We're here tonight for the Seven Steps to Awakening, and I'm going to be sharing from quote 662, 662. And actually, I did quite a bit of contemplation and writing on this one, so we'll see if we get any further than 662. It's possible that we will, but it's also possible that we'll spend the entire time with this one quote. I have given you a link that goes to my journal entry regarding this quote. The quote is a Yoga Vasistha quote, and I am going to read it. It's quite long. So sometimes when it's long, it's helpful just to close your eyes and really listen so there's no distraction. So if you choose to, you could close your eyes and listen while I read the quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. The mind is the hub around which this vicious cycle revolves, creating delusion in the minds of the deluded. It is by firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence that the whole wheel is brought to a standstill. When the hub's motion is stopped, the wheel does not revolve. When the mind is stilled, illusion ceases. One who does not know this trick and does not practice it undergoes endless sorrow. If you're someone who has been listening to my teaching for a great number of years, I'm certain that you have heard me talk about what I call the loop of experience. And I will start typing that loop into the room now. So if you all could just pause from typing in the room until I say I'm done, that would be great. That way my little lines here won't get interrupted. So let me share the loop of experience. It starts with what I think I see, what I see I experience, and what I experience I think. Okay, I'm done. So the restriction from typing on the board has been lifted. You may now type on the board. I just wanted to be able to type those three things together. What I think I see, and see here means perceive. What I think I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And then that goes right back to the top again. What I think I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And one example I always use, because it's actually a very common example, is that if I think that I am unworthy, I will perceive that I am unworthy. And if I perceive that I am unworthy, I will experience it in some way. And if I experience it, I'm going to continue to think it's true. And in fact, what this loop leads to is really us thinking that we're right. Because we thought something, then we perceived it and experienced it, so it seemed to prove to us that our thinking was right. But that's false. It doesn't prove that our thinking is right. The seeing and the experiencing comes from the thinking. The only thing that seeing and experiencing proves is what we're believing. It proves what we believe. It proves that we do believe it. It does not prove that it's true, and it does not prove that we are right. So, with this loop of experience in mind, listen again to this quote by Yoga Vasistha. The mind is the hub around which this vicious cycle revolves. And you can see the vicious cycle right here in the loop of experience. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. Pretty soon it's like a train. Cha-chug, 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 cha-chug. You can just see the train chugging along. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. Right? Cha-chug, cha-chug. So the mind is the hub around which this vicious cycle revolves, creating delusion in the minds of the deluded. And you can see how that creates delusion in the minds of the deluded. Already deluded, because I already had the thought, for example, that I was unworthy. But now it's creating additional delusion along those lines because my perception and my experience seems to be proving that I was right. I am indeed unworthy, right? So it is creating delusion in the minds of the deluded. The mind is the hub around which this vicious cycle revolves, creating delusion in the minds of the deluded. It is by firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence that the whole wheel is brought to a standstill. And, you know, if we're using this loop of experience as an example to explain what is being said here in the Yoga Vasistha quote, let's imagine for a moment that, I turned 55 today, so let's use that as an example. Let's imagine that somebody says, oh my gosh, you're so old. Not really thinking, but they didn't perceive me as 55. Maybe it's somebody who hasn't seen me in a number of years, an aunt or an uncle, and they just didn't think about the fact that, you know, that I was turning 55. And, oh my gosh, you're so old, right? Really an innocent statement. But if I have this thought in my mind, this belief in my mind that I am unworthy, this very innocent statement of surprise from someone who just wasn't realizing that I was 55, right? That can then be perceived by me as a statement I'm unworthy. In other words, they say, oh my gosh, you're so old. But what my little interpreter hears is, you're so old and ugly and useless and unworthy and fat and your skin is loose and you're getting wrinkles. And, you know, my mind hears all these things that wasn't said. You see, that's my perception. This quick interpretation that happens so fast that I want to shrink. Oh my gosh, I want to shrink away from the comment. And then I start feeling, this is where the experience comes in. I start feeling all of that unworthiness, and I just want to get away from this person, or I want to defend myself, or I want to start working out and go get liposuction and facelift, and, you know, I want to do something to try and escape from this feeling of unworthiness. And so then maybe I start thinking about, what can I do to look younger? What can I do not to age so fast? You know, what can I do? I keep thinking about it. And again, the reason I'm thinking about aging is because I've associated it with being unworthy. And so I'm going to continue to perceive in some way that I'm unworthy. I'm going to continue to experience in some way that I'm unworthy, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what is being said right now in the quote is, it is by firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence that the whole wheel is brought to a standstill. So let's start at the beginning of the story again. Now, let's just assume that I am someone who's really contemplating letting go of false beliefs. I'm someone who's contemplating letting go of the chattering ego mind. And so here it is, my 55th birthday, and I'm tootling along just happily, and then somebody says to me, 55? Oh my God, you're so old! And at first, I do feel that sting. Let's just imagine, at first, I feel that sting of unworthiness. But that sting of unworthiness for me now is like an alarm clock. It's showing me that I'm believing something. If I am experiencing unworthiness, if I am perceiving unworthiness, that must mean that I am believing unworthiness. So instead of shrinking away from the person, instead of thinking about liposuction and facelifts and all of that kind of stuff, I immediately look within my mind. And I notice that I am the one who decided that this statement meant I'm unworthy. And I look at that with keen intelligence. I look at that with wisdom. I remember the teaching of the loop of experience, what I think I see. What I see I experience, what I experience I think. I remember my resolve to let go of false beliefs. I realize the only reason this statement seems to me to be proof that I'm unworthy. Oh my God, you're so old. The only reason that statement seems to me to be proof that I am unworthy is because I already have that belief in the mind. And then what I do next just maybe depends on the spiritual training that I have, or depends on what feels most helpful to me in the moment. But some options are I could practice rest, accept, and trust with the feelings of unworthiness that are now arising. I can rest the mind. I'm not going to listen to the stories that I need liposuction and facelifts, or I'm not going to listen to any stories that might be judging the one that said that to me. I'm not going to listen to any of those stories. I'm going to rest the mind. I know this is all about my own believing. I'm going to accept that this is how I feel. This unworthiness feeling is here now. That doesn't mean that it's a true statement about me. It only means, again, that I believed I was unworthy. So I'm going to accept how I'm going to feel. I'm not going to get in the way of it. I'm just going to let it be with it, allow it to be as it is without believing it. And I'm going to trust that this is my part in this healing. And I'm going to trust that healing is happening now. Rest, accept, and trust. Or another tool I might go to is self-inquiry. I might ask, what is it that has this thought of unworthiness? I might see that it's the mind. I might ask, who is observing this? Who is observing these thoughts of unworthiness? What is observing this emotion of unworthiness? I might shift into seeing myself as awareness. And from the seat of awareness, allow that to happen without having the connection of identification. Maybe I'll go into some type of journaling. Maybe some type of journaling is helpful to me. But what I'm going to do is something that stops the spinning of this wheel by applying spiritual practice instead of applying further believing. I'm applying spiritual practice, some type of forgiveness, some type of letting go, some type of allowance of undoing. Rest, accept, and trust to me is an allowance of undoing. I'm going to do something like that instead of, oh my gosh, I need a facelift. Oh my gosh, she is so rude. How could she say that to me? Oh my gosh, I need liposuction. Oh my gosh, I better go join a gym. Instead of all of that, I'm going to do some type of spiritual practice. And that is restraining this hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence. The quote continues, when the hub's motion is stopped, and the wheel does not revolve, which means this whole loop of experience has really come to a standstill now. When the mind is stilled, illusion ceases. And you can see why illusion ceases. Because if the mind is stilled, if the thinking of the false beliefs, the chatter of the mind is not happening, if there is no what I think, then there is also no what I see, and there is no what I experience, because they are kind of the outputs or the effects of the what I think line. And then the quote ends with, one who does not know this trick and does not practice it undergoes endless sorrow. And that, of course, is because of the continual spinning of the loop of experience. So let me read the quote one more time, and then we'll go and have a look at my journal. The mind is the hub around which this vicious cycle revolves, creating delusion in the minds of the deluded. It is by firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence that the whole wheel is brought to a standstill. When the hub's motion is stopped, the wheel does not revolve. When the mind is stilled, illusion ceases. One who does not know this trick and does not practice it undergoes endless sorrow. So now I am going to go look at 662A in my journal. Oh, one moment. Yes. No, he said bye. To me. All right. So 662A. Mind is the sum total of thoughts believed. When there are no thoughts believed, there is also no mind. This is kind of a review of the last teaching I did, which was 2 weeks ago. The last teaching I did, we saw this same statement that mind was the sum total of thoughts believed. We also saw that ego is the sum total of thoughts believed. And in fact, we really saw that the ego, or the sense of self, is also kind of an output of the thoughts believed. In the loop of experience, what I think I see, remembering that I see means I perceive, the fact that I perceive a me, the ego sense, I call it, the fact that I perceive a me comes from the thinking, right? If I think about me, I, mine, all the time, I am going to have an ego sense, right? I think about me, I'm going to perceive a me, and I'm going to experience a me, and then, of course, I'm going to continue to think about me. So the same loop of experience works to generate an ego sense. And in fact, one image that just kind of came to my mind, if you imagine this machine just cranking around, right? It's cranking around what I think I see, what I see what I experience I think. But as it's cranking, this smoke comes out of it, and the smoke kind of develops into a shadow of a person, and that's who I think I am. But the only reason the ego sense is able to rise up for me to identify with is because of the loop, what I think I see, what I see I experience, what I experience I think. If I begin to let go of the thinking within the loop, if I begin to realize that the perceptions and the experience are only the effect of the thinking, and I begin to really question the thinking with self-inquiry or practicing stillness with rest, accept, and trust, or awareness watching awareness, or some type of spiritual practice, and this whole machine starts to slow down, it's going to quit outputting the smoke, which means there's going to be a clearing that's going to happen, and that ego sense is just going to disappear. So without the mind, there cannot be an ego. And the mind itself, imagine that, the source of the ego. The source of the ego itself is just the perpetual motion of what I think I see, what I see I experience I think. Just that spinning. You know, it reminds me also when we were, once upon a time, several years ago, when we were at Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, on the 4th of July, and we had sparklers. And I remember my brother was spinning the sparklers, right? And when he was spinning the sparklers, it looked like there was a solid line of light. And of course, the instant he quit spinning the sparklers, that solid line of light went away. Well, that solid line of light is the mind. I mean, it appeared to be very, very solid, right? The mind appears to be something very substantial. The mind appears to be very substantial. Come on, admit it. It appears to be very substantial. But that is only because of the spinning of this loop. So the same reduction of spinning that causes the ego sense to fade also causes the mind to fade. So again, 662A says, mind is the sum total of all thoughts believed. Actually, it just says mind is the sum total of thoughts believed. When there are no thoughts believed, there is also no mind. All right, I'm going to scroll down and I'm going to click on 662B. Okay, I'm going to first read the quote again from the Seven Steps to Awakening. I love to keep going back to the quote that was being contemplated as these journal entries were written. The mind is the hub around which this vicious cycle revolves, creating delusion in the minds of the deluded. It is by firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence that the whole wheel is brought to a standstill. When the hub's motion is stopped, the wheel does not revolve. When the mind is stilled, illusion ceases. One who does not know this trick and does not practice it undergoes endless sorrow. All right, let's look at 662b. Mind is also a projection mechanism. Whatever is believed is projected from mind as some type of experience, like a film is projected onto a screen. And again, if you look, I'm going to go ahead and take a moment. I'm just going to pause for a moment, and I'm going to copy and paste this loop of experience into the room. So once again, please do not type on the board for a moment. Let me get these three lines side by side. So for a moment, no typing on the board. Because I know maybe some people have entered the room, plus these are about to scroll off of the board. All right, I'm done. You may resume typing on the board if you want to. All right, so if you look at this loop of experience, again, what I think, I see, what I see, I experience, what I experience, I think. 662B said, mind is a projection mechanism. Whatever is believed is projected from the mind as some type of experience. And we can see that that's exactly what this says, right? If I think it, I'm going to perceive it. If I perceive it, I'm going to experience it. Remember the machine that I talked about. I said mind was like a machine, this loop. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And it spins and spins and spins in this loop. And then I said there's like the smoke that rises from it. And that smoke forms into the shape of a person, and that's the ego sense. When addition to that smoke, there's a steam. And that steam rises up and seems to be everything that is not me. In other words, the whole rest of the world. The steam that is coming out of the machine is you, my home, my city, my world. So me and other, both are coming from the spinning of this experience loop. But again, if me and other both are coming from the spinning of this experience loop, then both disappear. If I put the spiritual practice in, the effort in, to slow and eventually stop this spinning, this loop, the thinking, the believing, the being invested in my thoughts as true. Right? If I let go of that, then everything else that comes out of the machine has to disappear too. So 662B says, mind is also a projection mechanism. Whatever is believed is projected from mind as some type of experience, like a film is projected onto a screen. All right, I'm going to scroll down and click on 662C. Again, I'm going to read the original quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening, number 662. The mind is the hub around which this vicious cycle revolves, creating delusion in the minds of the deluded. It is by firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence, that the whole wheel is brought to a standstill. When the hub's motion is stopped, the wheel does not revolve. When the mind is stilled, illusion ceases. One who does not know this trick and does not practice it undergoes endless sorrow. So 662C says, the seeing, believing loop is engaged through projection. What is projected is believed, and the loop, mind and ego, continues. What is projected is believed. We even have a saying in America. I don't know if it's elsewhere as well, but we definitely have it in America. Seeing is believing. Right? I know that it's true because I saw it for myself. I know it's true because I heard her say it myself. Right? Seeing is believing. Well, as I pointed out at the beginning of this teaching, that's a false idea. The whole reason I'm perceiving and experiencing is because I already believed. And now my believing is being reinforced through this loop of experience. But if I did not believe, I would not see and I would not experience. And again, if you've been around my teachings for very long, you know that there are certain beliefs that I have let go of, and as a result, I no longer perceive and I no longer experience, such as the belief in betrayal, the belief in rejection, the belief that one person can take advantage of or use another person, the idea that we are victims of so many things. I don't know if the victim idea is completely lost, I'm not sure, but it's certainly significantly weakened. There are lots of things I would have seen as victim before that I would not see as victim now. So how come my seeing and my experiencing has changed? I mean, even if you come to me and you tell me your rejection story or your betrayal story, and even if that story sounds completely legitimate to everyone else, when I hear it differently because I no longer have the belief of betrayal or rejection in my mind. So I hear it differently, which is why I'm a good person to tell your story to. I might be able to point something out to you so that you can start to see it differently too. But I'm not going to believe that you were rejected. I'm not going to believe that you were betrayed, even if you do, because I don't have those thoughts in my mind. So the fact that something is experienced is not proof of what we believe. It's proof that we do believe. The fact that it's experienced does not prove that what we believe is true. It just proves that we do believe that. And the freedom comes from letting go of the believing. Again, 662C says, the seeing believing loop is engaged through projection. What is projected is believed, and the loop, both the mind and ego, continues. So projection is a very crafty mechanism of the mind because it keeps us believing the mind. We say, yeah, mind, you're right. I thought she was going to betray me, and she did. Yeah, it reinforces it. So that means if we really want to let go of the believing, we can't let our experience be proof to us. We can't. We can't let our experience be proof. We have to see it differently. Instead of, I knew she was going to betray me and she did. That proves I was right. Instead of that thought system, it needs to be much more like, ah, look, I'm perceiving betrayal, and yep, I expected betrayal. This was in my mind first. You see how that's different? Instead of, I knew she was going to betray me, see how right I was? Instead of that, it's, ah, I'm experiencing betrayal. I have this experience of betrayal. And I expected betrayal. You see, it was definitely in my mind first. This proves that that loop of experience is true. It was in my mind, and now I'm experiencing it. I need to learn how to let go of this thought of betrayal. Please help me see this differently, Holy Spirit. Or lately I've been praying to Lord Buddha Jesus Ramana. Lord Buddha Jesus Ramana. That's just only very recently has that been coming, just this week. But I kind of have fun with it. Lord Buddha Jesus Ramana, please help me see this differently. I understand this is in my mind, or I could not be experiencing it. I get that. Help me to see this differently. And it's not, this is where some people get this just a little bit wrong. It's not, she couldn't betray me if I didn't believe this. She's not betraying you. You see, she's not. Because that kind of holds on to the belief. If I didn't believe in betrayal, she couldn't betray me. That's like saying, still saying betrayal is something real. She didn't betray you. All she's doing is being the free son of God, believing her own thoughts and acting on her own thoughts. She's not betraying you. There's no such thing as betrayal. Betrayal is merely a concept. Let go of the concept, you will see her and everything she did differently. It is not, it has never been, a betrayal. So again, 662 says the seeing believing loop is engaged through projection. What is projected is believed, and the loop, the mind, or the ego continues. So we not only have to question our thoughts, we have to be willing to question, even doubt, strongly doubt, our experiences. Really look within the mind. What am I believing that is causing me to perceive this or causing me to experience this the way that I am? I'm going to go ahead and click on 662D. I'm going to go ahead and read 662D. To see for oneself that mind is nothing, one must put effort into disengaging from mind's fantasy loop. This is the purpose of watching awareness. Time dedicated to watching awareness is time focused on disengaging from the mind's fantasy loop. I can't tell you the thoughts that come up during my morning meditations because I don't remember them now. So I can't tell you the thoughts, but I can tell you that that some of the thoughts that come up, I just feel like, you know, like the way I feel when I see some of these thoughts is like, oh, I'm so glad I saw that one. Oh, I'm so glad I saw that one. What happens when I'm meditating and I'm again practicing watching awareness or loving awareness, being with awareness. And of course the mind is constantly active, it seems like. Maybe not all of the time, but most of the time. And because I have the habit of letting attention go, it seems like those thoughts are temptations. That's the word I'll use. It seems like those thoughts are temptations. And my mind will sometimes want to go to a thought, and it goes to a thought enough for me to see the thought. But it doesn't during meditation go to the thought enough for me to believe the thought. I'm seated back enough in awareness that even though my attention habitually goes toward the thoughts are seen rather than believed. They're seen as nothing but the imprints of previous believing coming back around through this loop of experience. And there's this great, great, great gratitude that they're so meaningless to me now while I'm in meditation. And then, of course, I just turn my attention away from them, back to awareness again. I had a curious thought that came up, which, by the way, I also let go of, because if I didn't let go of the curious thought, it would have developed into more thinking. But I do remember one curious thought that came up in meditation, maybe this morning or yesterday. It was very recent. And the curious thought was, I wonder how much healing is happening with these thoughts that are arising when I am, by the way, I didn't have this many words to it. I had to put this many words to it to explain it to you. The thought was very quick and very brief and not quite so wordy. But the thought was, I wonder how much healing is occurring while these thoughts are arising and I'm seeing them just long enough to turn my attention away from them and no believing is happening. I wonder how much healing is actually occurring. And then, of course, I had to let that one go. Because if you sit there and think about, I wonder how much healing is occurring, well, then pretty soon you're going to be caught up in another thought stream. Another believing thought stream, right? Who is the I that would be healing, right? I'm going to be that in a way that process loop is still happening. I am thinking about a me healing. Maybe I'm even happy about a me healing. Maybe I'm even proud that I'm sitting here in meditation and a me is healing. I'm going to begin to perceive, you know, some kind of me healing. I'm going to begin to experience some kind of me healing. But isn't that still the machine going round and round and putting out some kind of smoke and some kind of ego image for me to attach to, a me healing? So even though that thought came up during meditation and I saw that thought, I still needed to do the same thing with that thought that I did with all of the other thoughts. And that was turn my attention back to the background of awareness to the best of my ability. I've also had, I know some of the thoughts that have come up during meditation are thoughts that I'm not doing this right. That's a thought that has to be let go of immediately. And I turn my attention to the background of awareness to the best of my ability. There's a lot of trust in my meditation. A lot of trust that if I do this to the best of my ability, grace or the inner teacher or something will help me in whatever way I need help. But the entire purpose of the event of taking that time for meditation is to have very focused time when I'm not doing anything else. To focus on awareness instead of being caught up in that loop. What I think I see, what I see I experience, what I experience I think. Instead of doing all of that, very special time set aside, what's it say here in the quote? For intense self-effort and keen intelligence, right? Firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence. And one thing I want to say about these words, by the way, there's something else that feels at least important to me when I'm in meditation. You know, the words here is, by firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence, the whole wheel is brought to a standstill. And I think sometimes when people read these words, like firmly restraining, this sense of control happens where they want to be very controlling in their meditation. There's something in me, in a very big way, that says there should be no control. Discipline, yes. Loving discipline. Gentle discipline. Willing discipline, restful discipline, trustful discipline, but not control. I don't know if you can hear how that is different, but for me it's very different. Willing discipline, willingly, every time I notice a thought, turning my attention back again. Lovingly turning my attention back to awareness again, because that's where I want it to be. Trusting as I do this process, right? Trusting as I do this process. But there needs to be a gentleness in this firmly restraining the hub. In the teachings of Inner Ramana, when Ramana was talking about practicing the mantra, I am that I am, he asked us to practice the mantra with love and discipline. And he said the consistency is the discipline. Consistency. So just being very consistent, that's the discipline. consistency and control are not the same thing. I noticed Michael's in the room. Michael's saying one could say a discipline without effort, without force. And as I was saying, Ramana was saying that consistency, the inner Ramana, was saying that consistency is discipline. So just when I'm in meditation, just every time I notice my attention has gone outward towards thought again, which is a habit, every time just turn it back again towards awareness. Very consistent, but it doesn't have to be forceful. It doesn't have to be controlling. It doesn't have to be judgmental. It can be loving. It can be trustful. It can be willing. So again, 662D says, to see for oneself that mind is nothing, one must put effort into disengaging from mind's fantasy loop. This is the purpose of watching awareness. Time dedicated to watching awareness is time focused on disengaging from mind's fantasy loop. Time dedicated to watching awareness is time focused on disengaging from mind's fantasy loop. And there is also a 662E, so I'm going to click on that. And I'm going to go ahead and read our quote one more time. This is quote number 662 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. The mind is the hub around which this vicious cycle revolves, creating delusion in the minds of the deluded. It is by firmly restraining that hub through intense self-effort and keen intelligence that the whole wheel is brought to a standstill. When the hub's motion is stopped, the wheel does not revolve. When the mind is stilled, illusion ceases. One who does not know this trick and does not practice it undergoes endless sorrow. Yeah, Mike is commenting that nowadays my journal has A, B, C, D, and E. That means I spent a really long time with a particular quote. Insight after insight. So 662E says, the more time spent watching awareness, the better. Now, first of all, Michael's in the room, so this gives me an opportunity just to say very directly, Michael, thank you so much. For those of you who don't know, this is Michael Langford here in the room. And Michael is the one who finally got me meditating. I started sometime around May. This is now August 2nd today. And I am still meditating. That's wonderful. If I've done something that long, it means I'm probably going to stick with it. I remember when I started doing the Course in Miracles workbook for students in 2004, when I got around day 100, when I hit the triple digits, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm really doing this thing. Look at it. I haven't quit by 100. This means I'm going to keep going. Well, since I committed to meditation in early May, I've been to China for 2 weeks. I went on a family vacation. It seems like I've been on another trip. Oh, we went up to Jasmine's school for her orientation. We went on a family vacation to Buena Vista. And I'm still meditating. So if all of these beginning not being home, lots of shifting and changing, if that hasn't knocked me off of this new commitment, I think I'm committed. I think it's going to continue. And I'm very happy, Michael. I really want to say thank you to you because you have directly inspired this commitment in me. So thank you. So 662E says, the more time spent watching awareness, the better. But when I first started, let's talk about before May. Again, if you guys know me, have known me for a long time, you know that this isn't the first time that I tried to meditate, right? It's not the first time that I tried. And the story always was before, 10 or 15 minutes into it, I would fall asleep. I just couldn't. And Michael actually recommended a different kind of meditation to me that I hadn't tried before. It's called the Loving Consciousness Method. And in fact, if you're wondering what the Loving Consciousness Method is, Michael now has a new book out about the Loving Consciousness Method, which you can get on Amazon. Let me grab the book for you. It's right here. It's called How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. And this book has several things in it. It starts off with a section of quotes. It includes quotes by Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, W. Norman Cooper, Eva Bell Werber, Margaret Koble, Elise Morgan. If you were here this morning during the gathering, you heard me share a couple quotes from Elise Morgan, Muru Ganar, and then Vasistha, who we're listening to a Vasistha quote right now. We're contemplating that. And then after the section on quotes, there's a section that talks about the Loving All Method, which David Hempel taught here on in May when he was the minister. But the Loving All Method is the method of loving everything throughout the day. But if you can't, allowing everything throughout the day, accepting everything, it's letting go of that resistance. Again, I kind of talked about that a little bit this morning when we were in the weekly gathering. The Loving All Method is a method that you can practice all of the time when you're not sitting in meditation. And then there's the chapters on the Loving Consciousness Method, which is the method of meditation that Michael recommended for me. And my first day in the Loving Consciousness Meditation, or maybe it was the second day, maybe the third day, but real early in the process, something happened in that I saw the sleepiness coming. The sleepiness that I always experienced before, only this time I saw it from behind it, and I saw that it was nothing but a distraction trying to draw me away from meditation. And as soon as I saw that, the sleepiness died. I've been fine with meditation ever since. And Michael has recommended that I meditate for an hour. I read quotes for 30 minutes, and then I meditate for an hour, so it's 90 minutes altogether. He said if I did that, I might start to like the practice. And that's really happening now. What's really happening now is that I love the practice, and I'm finding that when the hour is up, I have a little ding that goes off when the hour is up, I don't want to stop. Now, there are some days I have to stop. Like this morning, I had to stop because then I had to get ready to come to the gathering. This morning, I was Dove's reader. There are some mornings when I have classes, like at 8:30 or something like that, that I have to go to. But there are other mornings now when I wouldn't have to stop. I mean, once that ding happens, if I want to stay, I can stay. And so one thing that happened to me this morning when I did have to stop is I realized from now on, if I don't have to stop at the end of an hour, I'm going to continue just for as long as I feel to do it. Maybe somewhere, if I have to stop later, like an hour later to do something, maybe I'll set a separate alarm for when I really have to stop. Like the true drop-dead date, you know. I have to stop because I have to get to a meeting or I have to do something. But again, we're reading 662E. The more time spent watching awareness, the better. But if I had started off, and I think Michael knew this, which is why he made a different recommendation for me. If I had started off trying to do the 2 hours with as much resistance as I had to meditation, I probably would have quit and I wouldn't have been committed from May until now, August 2nd. But because I went into this in a gentler way, I see Michael saying if I don't meditate, he'll come to Colorado and scold me. You shouldn't say that, Michael, because I'd love to meet you. I might just quit meditate so that you have to come. No, I won't do that. I'm joking. But because I started in such a gentle way by reading the quotes, and I already loved reading quotes, and then just doing an hour. And at first an hour was somewhat difficult. You know, I'd be thinking, oh, I wonder how much time I've been sitting here. But now the hour is very easy. And now I'm ready to spend more time, as much time as a given day will allow me. So again, there was a gentleness to that. There wasn't a too much at first. There was a gentle start, and now it seems to be naturally extending. It's extending through desire. The more time spent watching awareness, the better. But maybe in the beginning, if you're resistant like I was, it needs to be less time until there's something in us that's naturally ready to go on to more time. But start, right? Start. Because, again, this loop of experience, this thinking process is happening all of the time. And meditation is an opportunity to not be caught up in it. And we have a 662F as well. So you can tell I spent a lot of time with this particular. And G. We only have 2 minutes. Let me just see what we can do in the next 2 minutes. So 662F. Full-time focus disengaging from mind's fantasy loop is worth it. Because when one is fully disengaged, the loop has no power on which to spin. Since the spinning loop creates the appearance of illusion, no spin means no illusion. And I am going to go ahead and read the next one, but next week when I come back, I'm going to start here with 662F, because I would like to talk about this some more, and we don't have time. So for now, I'm just going to read these last journal entries related to 662, but I'm coming back right here. Again, 662F, full-time focus. We're going to talk about how to do that. Full-time focus, disengaging from mind's fantasy loop is worth it. Because when one is fully disengaged, the loop has no power on which to spin. Since the spinning loop creates the appearance of illusion, no spin means no illusion. And then I'm going to go on and read 662G. And this is the last one. The suffering that accompanies illusion enters any illusory story eventually. Again, the suffering that accompanies illusion enters any illusory story eventually. The best defense is escaping illusion entirely by disengaging from the stories told by mind. So next week when I come back, we'll start with 662F. We'll spend more time with F and G and then probably go on to 663. So I want to thank you all for being here. Michael, again, thank you very much for getting me started with a true meditation commitment. I love you and I love everyone here. And that's it. My time is up. Bye.